This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham and Zach Perilous going to talk some UVA basketball here. We're midweek of one of those big Monday all the way to Saturday weeks where we have some time in between games to decompress a bit. And then after this, it's just ramped up next week ACC tournament. And Zach, this week you took a look after the Virginia win at Syracuse. You took a look, sort of a second look at the death lineup concept and at least for one night in the win at Syracuse, maybe a new death lineup emerging, or at least a different one that Tony Bennett can use down the line emerging. I'll talk more about what you kind of noticed, especially in the second half of that game.
Sure. So that death lineup, it was interesting. A few weeks ago, we were thinking that death lineup was Virginia's big three of Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, and DeAndre Hunter. And then you had the two around them as Mamadi Diakite and Braxton Key. So against Syracuse, you kind of take out Braxton Key and you replace Jay Huff. So you replace Key with Huff. What was interesting there is Tony Bennett needed length, and that's what Jay Huff gives you. He needed athleticism. That's what Mamadi Diakite and DeAndre Hunter give you. And he needed shooting over a really good Syracuse zone. And that's what Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome give you. And so really, that was a lineup that was absolutely dominant. The number, which is just pretty incredible, is that lineup in the second half outscored Syracuse 40-9. And I don't think there's any world where you thought going into Monday night that that would ever happen, no matter who was on the floor, no matter if Syracuse even played their walk-ons the whole game. So, again, it's really a good lineup that he has at his that Tony Bennett has at his disposal, because it gives you that length, it gives you that athleticism, it gives you that shooting. And, you know, maybe it's not necessarily a death lineup against every team, but against the right matchup, it's a really, really good lineup that's skilled at all five positions, that's athletic at all five positions, and gives you length to compete with any team. Syracuse is the tallest team in the nation, and they were stymied against Virginia's length.
Yeah, and even though we were all mesmerized by the shooting from three, 18 for 25 for the game, 10 for 13 second half, you noted, and I noticed this too, but you brought the numbers to this, that even though 10 for 13 second half, that's 30 of the points in the second half for Virginia, a lot of the key to that was the presence of Huff and Diakite. Now, they scored points in the second half. I think Diakite had all 9 of his points in the second half of that game. But it was just the idea, as much as anything, of them around the rim, their ability to finish at the rim, even just the threat of an alley-oop pass to either of those guys, that sort of kept that back line of the defense back just a little bit for Syracuse, created those open shot opportunities. It was kind of like Syracuse picked their poison. It was poison. Either way you go. Either, okay, we're going to let Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome shoot from three, or we're going to let the two big guys who can score around the basket do what they do there. And the choice was, we'll let Virginia shoot from three, and oh, look, they're going to make every shot they throw up there. But it was the presence and the ability of those guys and Syracuse knowing that they can finish around the rim that created those open shot opportunities for the guys on the wings.
They really did. And the thing about playing is on defense, when you have a really tall roster, which is exactly what Syracuse has, those two things mix really well. You can defend a lot of the floor. The thing that you can't defend, no matter how long your arms are in the zone, is the three. And we mentioned, you know, UVA was knocking down threes at an absurd rate. And at some point, Syracuse was either going to get buried by threes, or they were going to have to extend a little bit. When they decided to extend even just a little bit, that's when Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter just picked it apart with those passes to the interior. Virginia, I believe, made 18 field goals in the second half, and 15 of them came off of assists. So against a long, athletic team like Syracuse, that is really, really impressive. That shows not only great ball movement, but great balance. You know, they could kick it out and make the three. They could get it inside and finish at the rim. When Virginia plays like that, it doesn't really matter who is the opponent. It doesn't matter what system the opponent plays. When Virginia shoots like that, they're impossible to stop, because now with guys like DP and Huss, they can finish around the rim, and that really hasn't been an element of a Virginia team in the past.
Yeah, and you note the assist to made basket ratio, even just in the second half of that game. I was thinking back to the Notre Dame game. Notre Dame played a lot of zone. They didn't play exclusively zone in the second game, the one back a couple of weeks ago in Charlottesville. But I looked at, just looking at the numbers, Virginia 19 made field goals, 12 assists total in that game. It just felt like that game the ball was a bit stagnant and more passing around the zone than, you know, than the dribble penetration and then kicking out or kicking into the post against the zone against Syracuse. Of course, Syracuse a much better zone team than Notre Dame, which was kind of playing it because nothing else was working, especially in the first game those two teams played. And so maybe, you know, maybe playing Notre Dame and then Georgia Tech also plays a lot of zone defense. Maybe playing those two games gave Virginia some sense of, okay, what we need to work on, especially against the zone defense. And they were really on all cylinders, especially second half. Now, defensively second half, also that lineup was so good. You know, we got so, I'll use the word mesmerized again, with the 10 for 13 shooting second half from three-point range. But Syracuse only had 19 points in the second half. And during that key run, 40-9 with the new death lineup on the floor, a 27-3 run over about a 10-minute, 5-second period of the second half when Virginia asserted control of that game. Defensively, that lineup obviously played very well as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to, I think we've talked about this a lot, and Mamadi Diakite, again, he's a guy who was so, so valuable for this team, really. I think in one of the previous podcasts, we kind of talked about him as an X factor. When Diakite plays well, like he played in that second half, Virginia is a completely different team on both ends because you can play Mamadi Diakite as the five, as the biggest guy on the floor, or like we saw on Monday, you can play him as the four, have Jay Huff in there to give you some length and some core skill offensively, and Diakite holds up just fine there as well. So it was just, you know, Diakite makes everything easier on defense. It makes you more versatile. You can allow him to play pretty much any matchup. You know, he can come out and guard a shooting guard or a small forward if he needs to. But really, his ability to guard those positions allows Tony Bennett to really not have to worry about, you know, what if we have someone who might be a little bit lesser of a defender. And Jay Huff, he did a great job, but Mamadi Diakite allows Virginia to mask some of Huff's weaknesses defensively. And on Monday night, Diakite was just terrific on both ends. And that really helps Huff, who can focus on, I'm defending one guy, and his job is to send Pascal Chukwu. Chukwu had a couple good moments in the second half, but certainly nothing like his first half. And Virginia, with all that length and all that athleticism, was able to stop the guards, and then the big men really couldn't do a whole lot off of that.
So fans, and you know, and we're fans too, even when we're analysts and writers, but we're also fans. But a lot of fans say, play Jay Huff more. That's all you need to do, and this team will be better. And I like what you point out in this column. And of course, Huff has played at least 17 minutes in each of the last four games. And so, you know, he's, so Tony is playing Jay Huff more, and Huff's been effective. He's scoring 7.3 points and averaging 4.3 rebounds per game over that stretch, and playing good defense as well. You know, rebounding, he had 6 rebounds against Pitt, he had 5 against Louisville, 5 against Syracuse in the game Monday night. But you noted that, okay, so what it more says here, and I think you talked about this just a few minutes ago, it's more about the lineup flexibility that Tony has now. Kihei Clark, yeah, against a team like Syracuse, that's the biggest team in the country. Maybe against a team like Duke, especially, you know, when Duke's guards are, you know, Trey Jones at 6'2", a couple guys at 6'7". It could be tough for Kihei at 5'9", to get a lot of minutes there. But he was a key in Virginia's win in the first game against Virginia Tech. He really shut down Justin Robinson, in my mind, maybe the best point guard in the ACC. And so there are certainly matchups where Kihei is very valuable. There are matchups where Jack Salt defensively and rebound-wise very valuable. So it's not as simple as just play some guy more, Jay Huff more particularly. It's about here's another option that Tony has, and when you play in an NCAA tournament situation, if you want to win a championship, you've got to win 6 games. You can't win 6 games with the same lineup. You have to have some flexibility, and Tony has more flexibility, especially now that Jay Huff's emerging.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right on point with the NCAA tournament analysis because we're into March, and, you know, the goals for this team right now are to win tournaments. And the thing about the NCAA tournament is how many ways can you win? And we already have seen that Virginia can win with its defense. Virginia can win simply with its offensive efficiency. But it goes way deeper than that. It's can you create mismatches against big teams? Can you create mismatches against small teams? Can you take advantage of a team that likes to play up tempo? Can you basically find a way, once you get to the NCAA tournament, can you find a way to win six games against what is probably going to be six pretty different opponents with limited preparation time? And this game, I really thought, just proved that, yes, Virginia can beat. There's no team that plays like Syracuse, and Virginia proved that they can beat a team like Syracuse on a short turnaround. They only had, you know, really a day or a day and a half to prepare. And they proved that they can go up and dominate, and that's because they have the players to do that. And then, you know, you look back a few weeks ago, they were able to go into Blacksburg and beat Virginia Tech in a completely different style. Last weekend, they were able to do that against Louisville in a completely different style. It's just, the more that you can do, the more that a coach has this toolbox, the better that coach and that team is going to be. And I think right now, Tony Bennett's toolbox is only getting bigger and bigger because he has the personnel to beat a lot of different types of teams.
It's here I'll mention a column I wrote today, and it's more a macro column, not looking at looking specifically at lineups or anything like that, but looking at where the KenPom.com analytical rankings put things. I actually look back at the last 17 NCAA champions, and because I noticed in looking the last 4 years that the national champion each of the last 4 years ranked in the top 11, in the number 11, I don't know why, it just was the top 11, of adjusted offense and adjusted defense, very balanced. I mean, so you didn't have a team that was, say, the best offensive team and then the 50th best defensive team, which is sort of, you know, when you look at Virginia last year, was ranked second nationally adjusted defense, but 30th in adjusted offense, so an unbalanced team. But the last four champions, all top 11 both ways, both offensively and defensively. I went back all 17 years. Kent Pom's numbers date back to 2002. And actually, if I extend it out to the – if you go to top 19, offensively and defensively, 16 of the last 17 national champions were both top 19 offensively, top 19 defensively, and 12 of those 17 were top 11. Well, Virginia, this year, second offensively, second defensively, there are four teams that are ranked in the top 11, and they include Duke, Michigan State, North Carolina. There are a total of eight teams that are ranked in the top 21. I extend out to 21 because – Michigan is third defensively, 20th offensively. Tennessee is third offensively, 21st defensively. So I'm saying all that, all those numbers to tell you that this Virginia team statistically, from that macro numbers perspective, fits the profile of a potential national champion much better than last year's team, which was the number one national seed overall. The only other team that Tony Bennett's had that ranked in the top 11 in both was the 2016 team that went to the Elite Eight. Lots of us think should have been a Final Four team, maybe even better than that, the loss to Syracuse in the Elite Eight. So all that said, I think those numbers kind of confirm what we're talking about here. Tony's got the flexibility. He's got the best offense he's ever had, and he's not had to sacrifice defense to get there. That's the interesting thing to me, is that the defense is just as strong and the offense is as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you kind of hit the nail right on the head. This is, you know, people talk about, is this Tony Bennett's best team? Is it his best offensive team? And you already know the defense is going to be very good. I think the thing is, it's his most versatile team, and that's what makes it arguably his best team. You've looked at past teams, and even that 2016 team really relied on its guards a lot. We're going to win by locking you down and getting better guard play and creating second chances with our big men. I don't think that they had the versatility, though, to be able to say, all right, you know, this game we can throw it into two skilled offensive big men in Diakite and Huff, or we can shoot from the outside, or when we're playing at our best, we can do both. And we saw Virginia at its best against Syracuse. And I think that's, again, what makes it so dangerous. you can't go at this Virginia team and be like, we're really going to focus on its guards. That's what Louisville did. Chris Mack admitted, we went into this game and we said, we're going to have to slow down Jerome and Guy. And they did a great job. The Cardinals locked those two guys down. Guess what? Virginia still won by double digits because it has DeAndre Hunter, it has Jay Huff, it has Mamadi Diakite. So, again, just so versatile. There's no way to lock down five offensive threats. And I think probably for the first time, each of those five guys that played that big role in the Syracuse game are really legit offensive threats.
So I got to say, my final four, just analytics-based, of course, are no brackets yet. We're 2 weeks away from that, or a week and a half away from that. But my final four, just based on the analytics, would be Virginia, it would be Duke, it would be Carolina, it'd be Michigan State. From a Virginia fan's perspective, can you load a Final Four with more bad guys than Duke, Carolina, Michigan State? That would be, for a lot of UVA fans, that might be a nightmare Final Four. To me, that's a dream Final Four because if you're going to win a national championship and you got to beat, Duke, Carolina, Michigan State, what the heck? Do it. Go for it, right?
Get the revenge. That's what March is for.
That's right. So let's talk about your Jack Salt column. As we were talking about the lineup flexibility, there are certainly fans out there. They've been wondering for 5 years, or I think it's 107 years, according to Kyle Guy. Kyle gave a quick comment during one of the game broadcasts recently saying Jack Salt's been at UVA for 107 years. It only feels like that. But Jack is a fifth-year senior, and he's had an interesting career at UVA. He's one of Tony's favorites, despite the fact that his shooting range is about 3 feet. But he can box out. He plays great defense. He finishes around the rim, and he's a fun interview as well. But you talk about Jack, his impact on this program, what he's done on the floor. Can we overstate even for a guy who doesn't put numbers up, but he's so important to this program?
Yeah, I mean, you can't overstate the impact that Jack Salt has had. But really, it's that he's been here, you mentioned 107 years. He's been in Charlottesville for 5 years, and when it's hard to imagine because it seems like Virginia's been so good for so long. And really, when you think back to when Jack Salt first arrived, Tony Bennett was still dealing with a lot of transfers out of his program that didn't really want to buy into what he preached on defense, or they just weren't quite the right fit. And Jack Salt basically came in, and he was one of those guys. You talk about a Joe Harris or a Malcolm Brogdon. He became one of those guys, just like those two, who was a perfect fit and accepted the challenge of becoming a perfect fit. And that's why 5 years later, he's gone from a guy who came in when Virginia didn't really have a culture or was still trying to establish the guys that would establish a culture. And now 5 years later, he's part of a team that has as good a chance as any to win a national championship. So, you think about Jack Salt came here, it's been 5 years. And really those 5 years is when we've seen Tony Bennett, turn his players into pros, turn some of his really good players, really good college players into really good NBA players. We've seen him take unheralded recruits and make them very good college players. Jack Salt is never going to be the guy who you'll credit for making Virginia basketball what it is today. You'll think of Brogdon and Harris and Perantis and some of those other guys. But really, when you think about it, who's the guy who's been there for that entire turnaround? And it's Jack Salt. And simply because he bought in, he did everything that Tony Bennett could have asked for out of a 6'10", 250-pound guy. He told Jack Salt, you'll anchor our defense, you'll set good screens, you'll be an opportunistic scorer, and you'll do the little things right. And when you have guys who can do the big things right around you, you just need those really good role players to fill the gaps. And I don't think, if you look up the definition of a role player in the Virginia Basketball Dictionary, there's a picture of Jack Salt.
I'm thinking it was one of the preseason media days, and it was probably 3 years ago. So we're talking early in Jack's ascendance to his playing time at Virginia. And I asked a question of Coach Bennett just to talk about Jack Salt and what he means to his program. And this is a while ago, and Tony talk for, you know, Tony's not the most talkative sort, but for 3 or 4 minutes, he talked about Jack Salt setting screens. And, you know, every time now I think about when I see on a message board or a comment on Twitter or whatever it might be from a fan, why does Jack Salt play so much? I think about that 3 or 4 minutes that Tony talked about Jack setting screens and how – because in Virginia's offense, I mean, it's a motion offense. So much of the activity is based on those baseline screens, those post screens, and it constantly moving. And we're not watching that. We're watching Kyle Guy hit the three, DeAndre Hunter drive to the basket, Ty shoot the floater, you know, all that. Jay Huff with the alley-oop dunk. We're not watching Jack set screens. We're not watching Jack box out and not get a rebound. Oftentimes he boxes his guy out and somebody else gets the rebound, but he's keeping a great rebounder from getting that rebound. And you don't see that. It doesn't show up in the box score. But Tony, I think you put it right there, Zach. It's the epitome of Tony Bennett basketball. Yeah, somebody's got to score the points at the end of the day so that we can, you know, so the team can win the games. But Jack does those dirty little things that need to be done so that a team can win. It's often overstated. You talk about glue guys, but Jack Salt is an ultimate glue guy for any basketball team, especially this Virginia program.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another thing that makes Jack Salt, I think, so, you know, so special to people who have followed Virginia basketball is that he, you know, I talked about those transfers before. Jack Salt's the only guy from that 2014 class. He was one of four players. Two of them transferred away. Obviously, Mariel Shayok still having a great year out at Iowa State. BJ Stith ended up transferring away, and his Old Dominion also having had a very good college career. Isaiah Wilkins is kind of like a Jack Salt type. He had four incredible years at Virginia and won a Defensive Player of the Year award. And Jack Salt's kind of, you know, the reason that Isaiah Wilkins is so beloved in Charlottesville is because he bought in and he did the things that Tony Bennett needed to do to build a program to where he has it now. Jack Salt is the exact same way. Just because Jack's here one more year, because he took that redshirt year, he's maybe bearing the fruit a little bit more and having another shot at a national championship. But, you know, guys are beloved at, you know, different schools across the nation for different reasons. You have your stars. You have, you know, maybe a guy who goes to the NBA when it's a school that doesn't produce a ton of NBA guys. And that's why Virginia fans cling so dearly to Joe Harris and Malcolm Brogdon. But there's another reason that you cling to a guy like Jack Salt, because he came here and he simply did everything he could for 5 years on grounds to make Virginia basketball the best it could be. Jack Salt's not going to be an NBA player. Jack Salt might not play, a professional game of basketball anywhere. He very well could. But the thing that he did is he, for 5 years, gave his everything to Virginia basketball. There was never a ulterior motive. There was never a, I want to play more minutes. There was never a, I want to, you know, transfer somewhere else where maybe I can be a better pro prospect. It was, how can I help Virginia basketball, whether it's redshirting my freshman year or whether it's taking fewer minutes my senior year? How can I help Virginia basketball win? How can I help Virginia basketball build towards a national championship? And right now, it's hard to argue that anyone has built closer to a national championship over the last 5 years than Virginia. And guess what? Jack Salt's been there those 5 years.
Yeah, it's a perfect lead into I've told this Jack Salt story, I'm sure, before on a podcast. I know I tell it to everybody when I talk about Jack Salt. You know, I don't want to assume everybody listens to every podcast we do. Last year at the ACC tournament, the access you get to the players after games, the Clemson game, the semifinal game, Virginia wins by 6 points. For fans who, you know, maybe that was the game actually where DeAndre Hunter broke his wrist. He got hit hard in the second half and broke his wrist. He played the rest of the way. So that was an ill-fated game, as it turned out. But Jack Salt had a big role in that game. For a guy who doesn't normally score much, he had 8 points in the second half, 4 of 5 from the field. He had some really big baskets down the stretch when Clemson was coming back. But after the game, I went to interview him, and because I'd noticed that the first possession of the second half, in the old days, if you want to say this, the Anthony Gill days, Tony Bennett would emphasize the first play out of the locker room, second half, let's get the ball inside to Anthony and let Anthony do something. Let's establish the inside, kind of like a football coach wants to establish the run so they can throw the ball. And so you know, in the Gil days, you'd throw the ball to Gil. Gil would do a turnaround jump shot, and it would just set the tone for the second half. Well, second half, they come out of the locker room with Clemson. And darn if the ball doesn't end up in Jack's hands, and he shoots a little two-foot hook shot and scores. And he scores. He ends up scoring 8 points and a half, and he was, again, he was a key player in that game for Virginia. So I'm seeking out Jack Salt. I'm probably the only guy seeking out Jack Salt after the game to talk with Jack. Everybody's talking to Kyle Guy and everybody else. Jack, I've got to ask you, did they run a play for you out of the locker room? And he says to me, oh, no, Mike, there's no way they run a play for me out of the locker room. You know, I just happened to seal my guy off, got the ball, I scored the basket. But there's no way they're running a play for me, Mike. And that's that guy you just talked about, Zach. He's self-effacing. He's not the most important guy. He doesn't think he's the most important guy. But in a lot of ways, you know, in that game, he was key. Virginia doesn't play in the ACC championship if he doesn't have that second half. That day he needed to score, but you know that's the Jack Salt that we know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, the most important guy. The thing about Virginia basketball this year is, you know, there's probably a different answer for most important player. That's probably Ty Jerome, best player. That's probably DeAndre Hunter, and kind of the face of the program. That's probably Kyle Guy. But if you were to ask the players who's the most important guy, who's the one guy that you can't replace on the floor and in the locker room, I bet a lot of them would say that Jack Salt's that guy simply because he's a leader, he's a team captain, he's a guy who's been through the battles before, and he's a guy who has overseen the growth and development of Virginia basketball. He's just, you know, we're not in the locker room with the guy, you know, obviously, except for, like you mentioned, the ACC tournament, but we're not with them day in and day out. And Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome both said in the piece that I wrote, they both said, you know, Jack Salt is such an important person and such an important part of this team, whether he plays or not, whether he's healthy or not, whether he contributes on the stat sheet or not, because he's just such a consistent force day in, day out. You know, even if his minutes aren't consistent, even if his performances aren't consistent, you're going to get the same guy, you're going to get the same steadying force. And those are the things that make good teams great. Those are the things that, if a team doesn't have that, can make a great team only good or not good. He's a guy who has been through it all, can mentor younger players. You know, for example, when Jay Huff, he wasn't getting consistent minutes this whole year. He got a lot of DNPs, did not plays. And I'm sure, you know, Jack Salt was the first guy to say, listen, Jay, I've been there. There have been times where I wasn't playing as much as I wanted to or as much as I thought I would. I redshirted just like you did. But you know what? At the end of the day, here I am, you know, 4 years later, standing tall and standing part of one of the best teams in college basketball. And, you know, you'll be able to push through this too. He's just a guy who you can tell from others' words. You can tell that he's a really important part of that team. Whether he's on the floor, in the locker room, wherever he is, he's a really important part of the Virginia team and the Virginia culture.
So as we wrap the podcast up, we're a couple of days away from the Louisville game, Saturday, 4 o'clock. Virginia wins and another ACC regular season championship. It'd be the fourth in 6 years for this program. They had not won one leading up to that stretch. So we've seen this Louisville team who shot lights out for a half against Virginia and then couldn't throw the ball in the ocean in the second half. What can we anticipate? I mean, it's all guessing game right now, but in terms of adjustments, what might Louisville do and what can we expect Virginia to do in response as these two teams get ready to play on Saturday?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned Chris Mack had said, you know, we're really focused on Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy ahead of the last game. I think this time they'll focus a little bit more of their attention to DeAndre Hunter, especially after DeAndre had 26 points, a career high the last time around. But I think in general, they're still going to focus on that big three. And again, it's going to come down to, can Jay Huff and Mamadi Diakite score in the post like they did? I don't think, Louisville drastically changes its game plan. Obviously, they're going to want to do a better job on DeAndre Hunter. But in general, they followed their game plan to really good success in the first half, and then it all kind of fell apart because they couldn't stop DeAndre Hunter in the second half, and they couldn't shoot in the second half. So I think the big thing for this Virginia team is don't give Louisville life. We saw Virginia kind of slog its way through the first half, not really be as, you know, sharp or as, you know, accurate from three as we're used to seeing them be. I think the first thing for Virginia is going to be, don't give them life. This is a Louisville team that can play really good basketball and play with the best teams in the nation, but they haven't been able to finish the job for 40 minutes. So if you can eliminate any life, any sort of hope for this team, then you're already, you know, 90% of the way there. Louisville's not a team that's going to really battle and win a lot of games. If they can get up big early, we've seen them fall apart before, but we've seen them beat some good teams too. So, you know, eliminating any chance early, not giving them any signs of life, and I think Louisville is going to have trouble if they can't get off to a good start and feel like they can play with this Virginia team.
Just an odd thing I'll note out loud, as Virginia goes into this game with a 27-2 record with Louisville. 2015, Virginia went into the Louisville game with a 28-1 record, and in 2018, a 26-2 record. So this is a nice little run here of finishing up with Louisville with Virginia teams with good records. Just an odd little thing to point out. But and of course now I'll say the 2015 game came down to, in fact, that game was at Louisville, and Louisville won on a last second shot. 2018, Virginia won, of course, on the last second three, the bank in three by DeAndre Hunter. And so we've been in a situation before with a lot of stakes on the line, and Louisville's played well in these games. And we can certainly expect that on Saturday. So final thoughts, Zach, as we get ready for the weekend.
I'm hoping for a really nice senior day for Jack Salt. You know, I've written about him. He's a guy who, you know, has been there through the, you know, the highest of highs and lowest of lows with Tony Bennett. And I'm just hoping that he's, you know, his back is feeling good enough for him to get to some significant minutes. And, you know, one of the things I like the most about college basketball is, unlike, you know, the pros, there's a time where Jack Salt will walk off the JPJ court for the final time. And in the pros, you know, you never know if that final time is going to be because the guy, you know, might get traded in a day or he might leave in free agency. Very rarely do you get a guy like a Kobe Bryant who spends his entire life playing for one, you know, his entire professional career playing for one team, and then we saw how special his final game was. So I'm not saying Jack Salt is Kobe Bryant, obviously, but it's a really nice moment, and it's one of my favorite moments in sports, whether it's Virginia or whether it's any team in college, when those four-year guys or five-year guys walk off the court for the final time, hopefully near the end of a win, and they can just get a really nice, good ovation. I remember there were tears in Tony Bennett's eyes, I believe, when Joe Harris walked off the JPJ court for his final game. So I think that was the guy, and I hope that Jack gets a similar opportunity to leave with 2 minutes left in Virginia with the game in hand, because that'd be a really nice moment and definitely one that he deserves.
Let's root for that indeed. Well, for Zach Peerless, I'm Chris Graham signing off, and we'll get you ready for UVA in Louisville on Saturday at 4 o'clock. We can look forward the rest of the week to Zach's preview column and more. Signing off, I'm Chris Graham. Have a great day, everybody.